welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Well, I'm very happy to be back after my vacation with my wife. We went back to Wisconsin, where we're both from, to visit family and friends during the holidays. I hope that you all had a very enjoyable holiday season as well. And I'm really happy to be back and kind of getting back into things at work and also on the website and with the podcast. And this is the last podcast for 2008. I'm really looking forward to starting a new year as well. Well, today on the podcast, we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to talk all about professional tennis. I'm going to answer two listener questions, both having to do specifically with professional tennis players. The first one is going to be a question having to do with how to watch professional players. How are you going to get the most out of observing the best players in the world? Is there something specifically you should watch for, technique or footwork, or are there certain types of players you should be watching? That's going to be question number one. The next topic is a question I received from a younger listener about actually becoming a professional tennis player. What does it take to become a professional player? I'm going to discuss that and let you guys know kind of a little inside information on exactly how good you have to be and what it takes to become a professional. So if normally you listen to the show to get technical information and things having to do with your strokes or strategy, we're going to talk a little bit about that, but only as it has to do with professional players. I'm not going to be doing a lot of technical talk today, but all about the best in the world. We're going to discuss what sets them apart and how we can best learn from them. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for the Essential Tennis Focus topic of the week.
All right, let's get cracking here on podcast number 46. Our first topic has to do with watching professional players. And this was brought to me by John, who goes by Fight Fan on the forums at EssentialTennis.com. He wrote a post and said, "Ian, here's a slightly different idea for a future podcast. I think it could be educational, lighthearted, and maybe even a little fun. Everyone here probably watches tennis for entertainment, but how should we watch tennis on TV or in person to actually help our game? It would be ideal if you could discuss some things before the Australian Open starts in mid-January, so we could watch it in a different light." And then John posts a little paragraph here of questions, things, should we be watching for this or that, etc. And it's a little long, but I'm going to go ahead and read it so that I can kind of come back to it later and make a point. John then says, "Should we watch just one person the whole time, or should we keep shifting our focus back and forth? Should we watch footwork or positioning? Should we watch racket preparation or follow-through? Should we watch how they keep their eyes on the ball through contact? Shall we focus on choice of shots, i.e. cross-court or down the line or into the body? Which strokes should we watch? Should we try to learn from Federer's forehand or Nadal's, Federer's backhand or Safin's, Roddick's serves or Serena's? Should we look for depth of shot or angles? Should we watch men's or women's? Blah, blah, blah. The ideas are endless, I think. Thanks for everything, John." Sure, John. And this is a great topic. And listen, this is something that really can help your game. The people we see on TV are incredibly gifted. They're very, very good at what they do. And obviously, it's fun to watch because as tennis enthusiasts ourselves, we do our best to try to improve our own games. And to see people that actually get paid because they're so good at it, is obviously alluring to us. It's enjoyable to see them do something that we enjoy so well. And yeah, you can learn from seeing how they play and exactly what they do. Now, moving on to your list of things to watch, John, all of your ideas were excellent. basically to answer all of your questions where you ask this thing or the other. In a nutshell, my answer to all those would be yes. It's not either or. You should be watching everything they do and trying to relate it to what you do in your own game. And this kind of brings up two main points initially. We're going to talk about two main topics here having to do with that list that John brought up. And then we're going to do two short topics after that as well. The first main point I want to make here is that what you do see the pros do on TV is really a whole nother world of tennis compared to what we're used to doing and seeing on the courts in our own tennis, and myself included. I'm right around a 5.0 player, which is much better than the average player, good enough that I can make a living teaching tennis. However, the professionals that you see on TV, they're incredibly gifted. They're very, very good athletes. They put in countless hours of practice and training, and they just do everything well. You wouldn't see them competing at the level that they do, and on the stage that you see them competing on, if they weren't just extremely good at every aspect of the game. And you can pretty much pick any player you see on tour and see great examples of how to execute pretty much any skill that you want to learn. So, and that's why I say initially, John, basically my answer to all your questions was yes. You can watch pretty much any professional player. Well, not pretty much. You can watch any professional player take any of those individual skills you were talking about, and you can learn a great deal about how to do those individual skills well in general. That being said, yes, certain players on tour are better at some skills than others. They're all extremely talented without exception. However, as with anything, they're all talented in different ways. Every player doesn't have the same skill set, obviously, and that's what makes it interesting. Different players' skills match up against other players' skills differently. And so as you see players play each other and then kind of similar opponents, you'll see different outcomes depending on how the different skill sets match up. And so, yes, you will see different players better at some things than others. However, just keep in mind that in general, the level that you're seeing overall is extremely, extremely high. If you really wanted to nitpick and only watch certain players to get cues on how to execute certain strokes, I don't think that's really worth your while. John mentioned, for example, only watching Federer to learn how to hit a forehand or a backhand, as opposed to Nadal or Safin for a forehand or a backhand. Honestly, I don't think that's a good use of your time to just isolate one particular player, see what they're doing, and then try to emulate that. That's a very, very tall order for any of us. Being amateur athletes, we have limited amounts of time to spend working on our own games. And I'm not saying this to be negative and say it's impossible for us to copy anything that the pros do. No, that's not true. We can watch and we can learn and improve our own games by emulating the good things that they do. However, to say that you should only watch one player or one type of player to gather information to put into your own game, I think is probably taking that a little too far. Everybody who you see on TV has a great forehand. Now, as I mentioned a minute ago, yes, maybe Roger Federer's forehand is better than a certain percentage of the professionals out there, but that doesn't mean that Roger is the only person that you can learn from. You can learn great amounts from anybody you see on TV on any given stroke. So in my opinion, you're better off watching as many players as possible do as many different things as possible so that you can see how they compare and how they contrast, because you will see differences, usually small ones. The vast majority of what they're doing from player to player is going to be the same, and we're going to get to that a little bit later. However, you will see differences from player to player, and it's important to notice that, to understand what the differences are, and then kind of make a judgment for yourself which way is going to be best for you. So my tip on this is get as much information as you can about how the best in the world play, and then apply what you can to your own game, what seems most suitable to you and what seems like you're going to be able to do most likely. Obviously, you're not going to go out and make your forehand look just like Roger Federer's or your backhand look just like, you know, whoever, Murat Safin. Sorry, but that's not going to happen. If you could make your backhand just like Murat Safin's, then you would not be playing club tennis. You would not be playing 4-0 USTA League. You would be playing professional tennis. Murat Safin has trained thousands, tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of hours to make his backhand as good as it is throughout his entire life. It's not something you can just go out and do. Even if you are extremely gifted and talented, which he is, there's a lot more to it than just having skills and being able to analyze and try to copy. It's much more difficult than that. And we're going to get to that a little bit later as well. So that's point number one. I want you guys to be able to take in a broad amount of information and look at a lot of different players and watch carefully specific different things and see how different players do it. Don't waste your time getting caught up with trying to copy one player's stroke. That's awfully hard and maybe not be healthy anyway. It might not be a good fit for you, probably won't be, to take one specific player and just randomly pick that person because you like them and try to emulate that stroke. Now, main point number two, that being said, don't get caught up in the small details and idiosyncrasies from player to player either. Yes, I want you guys to take in a lot of information and look at a lot of different players and see how different players perform certain skills and certain strokes, but don't get too caught up with the little details of the strokes and of what they do. As you watch the pros, you will see differences, as I said a second ago. However, it's important to understand that a very large percentage of what's being done is the same from player to player. For example, when you watch any player on the professional tour, every player you watch, without exception, will use a split step from shot to shot. They will use a big part of their core on pretty much every single shot. They will use their core, the big parts of their body, without exception, to hit every shot, unless they're caught really off guard defensively and they just can't do it. If they have the ability to, you will see use of core on all shots. You will see every pro be loose and relaxed and fluid and make it, you know, just make it look pretty. And you'll see differences in that as well. But compared to the recreational player, the pros are loose, they're relaxed, and they're making good use of their body, of their kinetic chain. You will see most pros, if not all pros, use topspin to attack consistently instead of hitting flat. There are some exceptions to that. Some players hit more flat than others, but they are all using topspin. They're all curving the ball down into the court. That's true of all professional players. You will see every professional player use a continental grip on volleys and on serves. Again, with some exceptions here and there, but 98.5% of professional players are using a continental grip. Maybe a little bit farther than continental to hit a spin serve, but the point is they're all right around there. They're not using an Eastern forehand grip to hit a serve. No professional player uses an Eastern forehand grip to hit a serve. It's either continental or farther than continental, depending on if they're trying to hit a spin serve or not. So anyway, my point is there are certain things that every professional player does and every professional player does well. Those are the things you want to pick up on. Oftentimes on the internet, you'll find long articles and arguments back and forth between people on other websites about things like wrist angle at contact on a ground stroke, having a straight arm or a bent arm on a forehand ground stroke, or keeping the eyes still until after contact. Listen, those are all things that vary from player to player in the pros. And they aren't the reasons why the pros are so much better than us amateurs. The reason why the pros are so much better, for the most part, is the big essential things that I talked about a second ago. Use of core, being relaxed, use of topspin, continental grip on volleys and serves. The biggest difference between amateurs and professional players is big, important things like that. Not little idiosyncrasies between player to player. the way that Rafael Nadal hits his forehand and the way Roger Federer hits his forehand, at the very core of things, no pun intended, are very similar. However, they go about it very different ways. They're different people. They have different bodies. They have different styles, and they hit the ball differently. Arguing back and forth over which is better and being a 3.5 player is completely irrelevant. What you need to pay attention to is the big important parts of the stroke and doing those as well as possible. Arguing over whether your arm should be straight or bent because Rafael Nadal or Roger Federer does them different ways doesn't apply to us. We're playing completely different games than they are. They both have incredible forehands. So what you should be most concerned with is the big important parts of the stroke, the little the details from player to player. Don't get too caught up in that because you're going to end up wasting your time. Those things aren't going to be what make a big difference in your game. The biggest difference between a pro and a 3.5 player are the fundamental, essential things. So focus on those as you watch professionals on TV or in person. What are the essential and fundamental things? Well, I mentioned some general ones a couple minutes ago, but it's going to vary from stroke to stroke and exactly what you need to improve on. And that's what I talk about every single podcast. People come to me with questions on how they can improve a certain stroke, and they tell me how they're having problems. And the way I teach is giving out good, solid, fundamental information, things that you need to be good at if you want to be a good player. If you're a 4.5, a strong 4.5, or a 5.0 player already, then we can start talking about some smaller things that will affect your game positively or negatively. But if you're a 3.0 player or a 4.0 player, the biggest difference between you and a professional player is not going to be those little things. It's going to be the fundamental aspects and techniques in the game of tennis. Okay, hopefully I didn't lose you guys in that long dialogue there, but these are things that are important, and I want you guys to understand. Two quick things here, John, and I'll wrap your answer up. And you mentioned this first one already. It is very good to watch one player at a time for a couple minutes. That was one of the best suggestions that you made in your post. Yes, watch one player at a time for a couple minutes. Go back and forth and watch each player separately instead of the ball. And it's important to focus on their feet and see how they move. Professional tennis players move so well, and especially players in the modern game where you just have to be really at the peak of athletic fitness, and you have to be extremely quick on your feet. Without good footwork and good positioning, playing at their level is just not possible these days. And so watch their footwork. Every time their opponent hits the ball, they will split step. If you don't know what a split step is, or if you're not sure, I wrote a blog article about the split step several months ago. Go back and read that. Watch the size of their steps. Typically, professional players take lots of small steps. That was my next point, was number of steps. You'll see them take a lot of steps, and especially as they approach the ball and as they prepare to actually swing, you'll see a lot of little steps. Initially, if they have a long ways to go to get to the ball, you'll see them take longer, big strides, and then as they get closer and closer to where they're going to hit, you'll see them get their body under control with a lot of little ones. If you watch amateur players, you'll vary, depending on the level, of course, but lower level amateur players, you'll just see a lot, well, not actually a lot, you'll see a small amount of big steps, which is a terrible way to move around and position yourself in relation to the ball. Also watch just their general hustle level and effort. Out of most players, you'll see a huge amount of effort, and they tend to make it look easy, but they're working so hard out there. And also watch technique, how they move their feet laterally or straight on towards the ball, etc. Lastly here, focus specifically at what you're weakest at. This is going to be my last suggestion. If for example, your one-handed backhand is your weakest shot, which is mine, find a match with at least one one-handed backhand player and watch especially the slow motion replays closely. If you're watching a match where it's well covered and they're showing a lot of slow motion replays, it's very valuable to watch and see exactly how they're setting up for their shot, and the techniques that they're using, how they're using their body to hit the ball, how exactly they use their stroke. Even as you talked about, John, within strategy in a match, if they're going cross court, down the line, etc. All right, so John, that's my answer to your question. That went on for quite a while, and I could talk about it more. Hopefully that answers your question well. And if you have anything further on that, if you have any follow-up questions or thoughts, definitely feel free to shoot me an email or go ahead and post back in your topic under podcasts in the forums.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group. Is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com.
All right, let's move on to our second topic of the day, which is becoming a professional player. So, could you become a professional player? Are you a younger listener, maybe in your teens, and you're on your high school team getting private lessons, and your coach tells you you're progressing nicely, you're increasing in skill, maybe you're playing some tournaments with some decent results? Well, I have a question here from Cindy in Dallas. She wrote me in November and asked, is 14 years of age okay to play tennis and become a pro tennis player in the level field where you can tell me what level player you are? She didn't specify. And I sent her an email back asking her a couple questions, which involved basically, what level are you right now? At age 14, have you been playing tournaments? How often do you play and for how long, etc.? I tried to get some more information, but didn't hear back from Cindy. But this topic fit in nicely with today's show, so I wanted to go ahead and use it because I think it's important for people to understand, amateur players, to understand exactly how good the professional players are, exactly how wide of a range of difference there is between your average tennis player and the person you see on TV. Because the people on TV, they make it look easy. They're incredibly good at what they do, and they make extremely difficult shots just look routine. It's not really fair to us, but that's just the reality of it. Now, I'm going to do this carefully because if I'm not careful, I could come off as sounding either very pessimistic or as somebody who's not very kind. And that's a very nice way of saying it, by the way. Somebody who's not very kind. I don't want to come off as sounding that way. I'm going to try my best to give you guys a realistic look at what it takes without being too negative about it. That's my goal here in answering this question. So let's go ahead and move on. It's important to understand how good the professionals are. And again, I'm not giving this information to be negative or a downer to anybody that has high hopes, but it's important to be realistic and realize where you stand in the grand scheme of things if you are playing tennis, if playing tennis for a living is your goal. You need to know where you're at and exactly what it's going to take if you do want to make it to that level. So to put things in perspective, I'll use myself as an example, and I think I may have done this one other time in the podcast, but it's worth repeating. We need to respect the players on TV for who they are and what they do. So using myself as an example, I'm rated as a 5.0 player, which I saw a USTA study recently. And being a 5.0 player, I'm in the top 1 or 2% of players in the U.S. That sounds really good, doesn't it? Top 2%. And, if you're a 3.5 player, You think, oh, great, I'm just 1.5 steps away from being a 5.0 player. And certainly if I'm in the top 1 or 2% in the country, well, I must be pretty close to being a playing professional, right? Well, yeah, it sounds fine and dandy until you understand how many levels and strata are between myself and a professional player. Just using myself as an example, and I'm no slouch, compared to the average player. Certainly, I'm good enough to be able to teach and get by fine in that respect. But there's a wide difference between me and who you see on TV. As an example, I have played against somebody else I teach with, has been on the circuit on the professional tour, and was on the tour for I think right around 3 years, and was modestly successful. And I think he would say, if he was here, that's a fair assessment of how he did. As far as people who tried the tour go, he certainly didn't fail. He made it for 3 years. But he didn't do outstanding either, as far as the world scale goes. He made it to the 600s in singles, so top 700, right around 600, I think. And he made it to the 300s in the world in doubles. Now, if both of us played each other and we both had a good day, and by the way, by the rating scale, 6.0, technically means that you make most of your income off of competing in tennis. So between 5.0, which is myself, and 6.0, which would be this person, if we both played each other and we both had a good day, I'd be happy to hold my serve once or maybe twice per set. So it would be a score of like 6-2, 6-1, or something around there. That's pretty realistic for me. I've hit with him, and I've actually played against him in a doubles tournament locally here, and he actually played that match not feeling the best. Anyway, I fully understand the differences between him and I in terms of talent, in terms of how good of an athlete we are. He would beat me quite easily. 6-2, 6-1 would probably be pretty realistic for me. Now, if he played the 300th ranked person in the world in singles, he was around 600. If he went and played the 300 ranked guy in the world, he'd get beaten very similarly. He'd probably hold serve a couple of times, but really wouldn't be in the match. I'm sure he would admit that readily. If the 300 ranked guy, the guy who beat him, played the number 100 ranked person in the world, again, it would be pretty similar. The 300 ranked guy would probably win a couple of games and maybe make it respectable, but the 100 ranked person is just quite a bit better than the 300 ranked person in the world. And again, similarly, if the 100 ranked person played the person who's number one in the world, could possibly make it respectable looking, but it really wouldn't be very close. And so, in general, I'm kind of making a broad statement here, and I am generalizing, of course. I'm not saying that this is a formula that always works. There are, of course, upsets in professional tennis, but most of the time what I'm describing is pretty much accurate. There are just so many levels, even within professional tennis, where, again, the 600-ranked person just doesn't have much of a chance against the 300-ranked person. That's just kind of how it is. There's a lot of different skill levels within the game of professional tennis, and myself as a 5.0 player am not even really close to those levels at all. I don't belong on the same court as any of those guys who are ranked in the top 1,000 in the world. And I'm myself in the top 1 or 2% in the U.S. So that gives you some idea of what we're dealing with here. It's a huge, broad spectrum of talent. And to be anywhere towards the top is extremely hard. And by the way, just one other quick note, unless you're in the top 100, you can pretty much forget about making a comfortable living. And listen, you can be the number 412th ranked person in the world and get by, kind of. But most of these guys lead very difficult lives. By the time you subtract airfare and cost of living and traveling from country to country, any coaching or fitness help that you might get. And keep in mind, you don't get any money at all unless you win. If you don't go and win matches against these other people who are incredibly talented, just like yourself, and who want to win very badly and succeed, if you don't win consistently, you don't make any money. And this is these are the best players in the world. So unless you're winning enough to be in the top 100, by the time you subtract expenses, the vast majority of these guys are just barely getting by, and they are not really even making "quote unquote" a living, where they have a nice house they can come home to. It's just very, very difficult financially as well. Now, so to answer the question directly, can you be a pro? And you're 14 years old right now. Could you be a professional player? Well, quickly, let's compare what the average pro has done by that age. And I'm just going to ask a couple questions here. Do you already have a national level ranking, USTA ranking? And you're on the national ranking list, top, whatever, 200 or 300, fine. But do you have a national ranking yet? Are you hitting 5 or 6 times per week for 3 or 4 hours at a time per day? After hitting, are you doing an hour or two of fitness per day after you're done practicing? If you're 14 years of age and all three of those things aren't in place already, I'm not going to tell you it's impossible and it's just not going to happen no matter what, but you better be prepared to start working harder than that immediately if you want to have a chance at being a professional player. And what I'm telling you is just the reality of what the average professional player has gone through already by that age. These players are groomed at a very early age to be just elite athletes, and they get coaching and training and practice long, long hours, day in and day out. So if you're 14 and you haven't done all those things already, it's not impossible, but be prepared to have to work harder than that unless you have a huge amount of natural talent to get you through just on that. If you haven't already accomplished those things, if you're 14, if you haven't already accomplished those things, you're going to have to start catching up very quickly, especially on the women's tour. They're turning professional by 16 and 17, probably on average. By 18 or 19, if you're not already pretty highly ranked in the professional tour, you're running out of time very quickly. So that's my answer. And hopefully that didn't sound, again, too negative. But I want to give you guys a realistic look at how tough it is. And I want you guys, more than anything, not to think negatively about it, but really positively, to have a great respect for what these guys do and what you're watching on TV. It's very elite, and they work very hard to get to this level. It's a lot of fun to watch. Okay, that brings the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 46, to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today. I always appreciate it. Make sure you guys tune in next week. I have a guest lined up, if everything works the way it should. And I'm really looking forward to having him on. We're going to talk for a whole half an hour about losing, about taking losing the right way and learning from losing as best you can. Speaking of professional players, played on the tour, gave it his best shot for, I think, about a year or so, and also since then has helped assistant coach a very highly ranked Division I men's tennis program for a couple years after that. So he has a lot of experience to draw from, and I respect his opinion a great deal. So make sure you guys download podcast number 47 next week. I expect it to be a great show. But until then, take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.